Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. I'd like to welcome you to our presentation on virtual audits, an explanation of our approach and expectations. There's been some updates on this presentation in the time since it was last offered. So let's get right to it. Our topics for today, we're going to go over where virtual audit policy comes from and kind of get a sense of what PJR has to comply with in our approvals of virtual audits, our analysis of critical information, how we go about approving a remote audit, and make the decision as to whether or not the remote audit is going to be possible. We'll go over how remote audit works in terms of an audit report and non-conformances. I've got a couple of concluding remarks, and then we will address your questions. Now, in terms of where the policy comes from, you may or may not be aware, there is a high-level organization called the International Accreditation Forum, or IAF. And they are kind of the top of the food chain, if you will, in terms of management system certification. So if you've ever looked at your certificates, you'll see accreditation body logos on there from ANAB, from UCAS. Well, the IAF is one step above even those folks. And they publish kind of the high level requirements. And when it comes to remote auditing, there are two publications from the IAF that are pertinent. Firstly, we have the IAF ID3, that's Informative Document 3, which talks about managing extraordinary events or circumstances affecting certification bodies and certified organizations. And then more pertinent yet, MD, or Mandatory Document Number 4, the use of information or communications technology, shortened to ICT, for auditing or assessment purposes. Now, all IAF documents are actually public domain. So if you ever want to read these two documents or any other IAF document yourself, all you need to do is go to iaf.nu and you can search their data library therein. You can even Google something like IAF MD4 and locate that document in that fashion. So before we perform a virtual audit, before we even schedule a virtual audit, we are required to conduct what the IAF refers to as a risk-based assessment as to whether or not the virtual audit is possible. Now, as we're going to reiterate throughout my presentation today, the default position for an audit is always going to be on-site. The industry has recognized that an on-site audit, even in the best of circumstances, is almost always going to be more effective than a virtual audit, a remote audit. So when we pivot from on-site to remote, there's risk that's being introduced into the process. In other words, the risk of our assessment being less effective. So we have to have a documented record of that risk assessment. And our document for that is a document titled F108ICT. Now, this goes all the way back to 2020. Obviously, it was during the COVID pandemic that we first got going with this process. And we have updated this document to be a more fully realized risk assessment and not just a rubber stamp related to the COVID pandemic. So our F108 ICT is broken down into two sections. We have first what we call rationale, and then we have eligibility. Now, rationale is it's a checklist, if you will, of different options that you can select from to say, this is why we want to have a remote audit. Now, we technically, we are still open to requests that are rooted in the COVID pandemic. Now, those are getting harder and harder to substantiate. And as I'm going to mention in a couple of slides, we've instructed our auditors to be even somewhat vigilant about that. So if you're claiming COVID-19, understand that we are going to be very carefully monitoring that during the audit process itself. Also, if you have had a past audit where your auditor indicated to us that you were not a good candidate for remote audits, if we've had connectivity issues or a lot of hard copy records, in most cases, your request will not be approved. So let's go over the rationale options here on the next few slides. Now, the actual content has been provided in italicized text. So firstly, obviously, we are, as I mentioned, still providing an option for COVID-19 or for kind of a nondescript no visitor policy. Now, if you're indicating it's a no visitor policy, we are going to be looking for proof of that. And as I mentioned, we will be monitoring your enforcement of it during the audits. You know, if we're doing a remote audit, for example, and you're having other visitors, other folks that are visiting your facility during the audit, that kind of casts some doubt on whether or not you truly have a no visitor policy. Now, if you do and that's the case, that's certainly fine. But again, understand we are looking critically at these types of claims in terms of justifying a remote audit. We have an option if it was requested specifically by your auditor to perform a virtual audit. Now, again, as I mentioned, the default position is an on-site audit, but we do have some auditors who are either unwilling or unable to travel. We're working to limit those instances, but it does come up from time to time. So if the auditor has indicated to you or the scheduler is indicating to you that this is at our request, you go ahead and mark that option, not a problem. If you have a remote business model, you know, let's say that you are in an office environment and all you are doing is data processing or freight forwarding, or you act as a training provider and you're conducting online courses. Now, these are all good examples of administrative business models. Now, obviously, we're going to look at past audit reports. We're going to look at your scope statement to kind of substantiate those claims. But these are absolutely sufficient justification for remote audits in most cases. Now, even these types of companies, we have learned, it cannot be a permanent approval. We do occasionally have to go on site because, again, the on-site audit is always going to be more effective. We've also provided an option if what you're looking for is for a portion of your audit to be done virtually. So if you've got, for example, a 5-day audit and you want 2 of those days to be virtual, that's a possible request. Now, we actually refer to this as a hybrid audit, and I've got some further content on hybrid audits a little bit later in my presentation here. Now, we also provide a final option if you've had past successful virtual audits with us. Now, again, we're going to be looking at past audit records, at your scope statement, and we're going to really be looking carefully at this, especially if it is for an audit that's going to involve manufacturing. In almost all cases, if it's a manufacturing audit where we're going to be out in the production area, those almost always have to be on site for obvious reasons. Now, in terms of options that we will not accept, we won't approve for virtual for saving on audit or travel expense. We won't approve for virtual just because last year's audit was virtual, or if it's more convenient, or if it was something that was promised to you by your salesperson. Our default position is supposed to be for an on-site audit, especially for those organizations that manufacture a tangible product. Again, you have to recognize this is a risk-based assessment that we're making and approving for virtual. And doing the virtual introduces a risk of the audit being less effective. So moving on from rationale, the second part of the F108 ICT is eligibility. And there's a couple of things that we are screening for when we look at the eligibility side of the equation. Firstly, we need to confirm that you're able to use one of the virtual meeting software options. Now, we offer GoToMeeting or Microsoft Teams as kind of starting points. And for most organizations, one of those two seems to work just fine. We have had other clients that have told us that they need to be on WebEx, or they prefer Zoom or Google Meet or something of that nature. All of those are fine also. We just need to know what your preference is. Obviously, we need to know that you support a virtual audit. In other words, are your records primarily electronic? And that becomes very critical, again, because it adds time to an audit if we're trying to look at records over a camera feed or running back and forth to a scanner. Are you going to be running normal operations at the time of the audit? Now, that question, frankly, is more rooted in what we used to have to look at during the pandemic. So in most situations, that answer hopefully is going to be yes. Do you have sufficient hardware and Wi-Fi coverage? In other words, are you going to be able to have real-time communication without it being spotty or breaking up with static or things of that nature? So that's critical. Are the auditors going to be allowed to do live video interviews? Telephone interviews are not acceptable. We need to be able to kind of see the person face to face, again, just like it would be if we were there in person. Do you have the technical capability to support a remote audit? Can you troubleshoot on connectivity problems and so forth? Have you gone through virtual audits in the past? Was it something that was value added for you? Have you had any changes in your organization since the last audit? Question nine was pertaining solely to R2V3 transition audits. So I will skip past that one. Now, obviously, there's more than one reason to have a virtual audit. Now, our long-term plan was always to expand it beyond emergency use. Even before the pandemic, we were exploring particularly hybrid audits as an option where we could add value to our clients. We could save our clients some expense, and we could also improve auditor work-life balance by having a portion of the audit be done remotely. The key, of course, is that you capture the rationale in a traceable manner. Now, as I've hopefully made clear, remote auditing is a privilege now. Now that we are past the pandemic, it is absolutely a privilege, and we are required to kind of press the matter with our clients to make sure that they are able to participate in the remote audit in a manner that makes it almost as effective as the on-site audit. And that's really what we're pushing for with requiring that paperwork. Can you pull this off and have the audit be of the same quality as what would happen if our auditor was there on site with you? So just to kind of re-summarize here, virtual auditing means a live chat over a person-to-person interface with live sharing of the auditee's screen. So it's not a phone call, it's not trading emails back and forth. It is live chat person-to-person in real time. It also means that records are primarily electronic. We do allow exceptions here and there, but the majority of your records need to be electronic in order for a remote audit to be approved. And if there is a production assessment to take place, in as many cases as possible, production needs to be done on site. And this is going to mean that potentially what we're looking at is a hybrid audit, where a portion of the audit is remote and a portion is on site. Now, again, as I've mentioned, hybrid audits are now a possibility. As I mentioned, there's cost savings for our clients, auditor quality of life improvements, et cetera. So let's unpack this just a little bit. Let's say, for example, you have a five-day audit to be performed. In this situation, the first 2 days of the audit would be done remotely. And would include administrative areas, things like management review, internal audit, sales, et cetera. Then on days 3 through 5, the auditor comes on site and assesses production or other key technical areas like design. Another option, let's say you have a 4-day audit to be performed. One auditor might perform the administrative aspects virtually, and the second auditor, let's say there's two, would come on site to look at production. So the audit is finished in 2 days, but with one auditor on site and one auditor participating in a virtual capacity. Let's say that you have an on-site audit that results in multiple majors and requires a revisit. Well, the revisit potentially could be done virtually, particularly if the majors are all rooted in administrative areas. Finally, let's say that we are in the midst of an audit and we find out there's been a headcount increase, and we are now looking at an additional half day of required audit time. Well, it is possible that we could assign another auditor to conduct that audit time concurrently. In other words, we bring on a team member, make up the difference in audit time, and the audit finishes on time as originally scheduled. These are all possible benefits of having a hybrid audit. Now, I want to again emphasize that virtual auditing is not accomplished by emailing a bunch of stuff to your auditor for offsite review. Among other things, this violates MD4 from IEF, where it states that we need to have controls in place that could that are going to prevent compromising the integrity of the audit. And the viewpoint that's taken by the industry is if you are selecting the audit samples yourself, that principle is not met. And that even includes situations where everything is provided in a Google Drive. You have to have the synchronous face-to-face between the auditor and the auditee while the information is being looked at. That is critical. So yes, you can email your stuff to the auditor, but the reviewing of that information needs to be done face-to-face, just like it would be if the auditor was on site. The audit itself, it needs to have the same rigor and preferably the same technique as if they were visiting your facility. Also, random sampling, which is mandated by IEF and the ISO 17021 standard, it is absolutely still in effect in a virtual assessment. So just to make it very clear, an offsite audit is not the same as a truly virtual audit. Now, if our review of information leads us to conclude that a virtual audit is not going to be possible, if you don't have electronic records or some other impediment to a remote audit, and for whatever reason we can't get on site, you've had perhaps some sort of illness outbreak, or there's other circumstances at play, we would refer to the IAF ID3. And depending on your situation, we can proceed in one of a couple of ways. If you just got certified, there is a requirement that states we have to do your first surveillance audit within 6 months of when we issued your certificate, within 12 months of when we issued your certificate. Well, we can delay that first assessment by up to 6 months if there is justification. Now, your regular surveillance audits, if you've been certified for more than a year, you're probably already aware that those have to take place within the calendar year. So, for example, if you have an audit in August of 2022, your next audit could be as late as December 31st, 2023. It simply has to take place within the same calendar year. Now, the obvious extreme situation is if you are dealing with an expiring certificate. We do have, in extreme situations, the ability to extend a current certificate by up to 6 months if we are unable to perform our audit for a justifiable reason. So if you're in any of these situations, reach out to us, let us work with you, and we will come up with a solution that is as reasonable as we can make it. Now, ideally, within the virtual audit process, we want to try to stick to administrative areas. So I've got kind of a short list up here of items that are typical for a remote audit. So obviously, we have the high-level areas, things like management review and internal audit and corrective action and so forth. But then we can even get into stuff like your order entry process, your design process, your complaint resolution process, and so forth. So particularly if you are a manufacturing company and you're interested in a hybrid audit option, this is definitely some things that can be looked at as part of that hybrid audit during that virtual portion of the hybrid audit. Now, once the audit has started, you're going to obviously want to make sure that your audio and visual settings are working properly. If you have a built-in microphone, that's preferred, but you may want to use a computer headset. You can choose to call your auditor on a landline to facilitate audio communication if that's the case. But again, we definitely need to have that face-to-face via the cameras. So that last bullet point there, again, that's going to be hopefully very rare and only in exceptional circumstances. Again, random sampling is required. The screen sharing capabilities that are offered are intended to make it feasible for your auditor to review your screen, select the items they want to review during the audit. And they absolutely have to be selecting their own audit samples as if they were on site. Again, off-site and virtual auditing are not to be taken as the same thing. In terms of the audit report, you should definitely expect the audit report to be turned over to you within the time frame that it would have been had the auditor been on site. That should not change. The content of the audit report will be precisely the same. You'll get your report, your nonconformances, your audit plan, and the acceptance of findings form. Now, if you're doing a hybrid audit and there's going to be a bit of a gap between the virtual portion and the on-site portion. In most circumstances, the audit package will not be provided to you until the full audit is complete. But we can provide documented verification of the virtual portion's completion if you happen to need it. In terms of non-conformances, it is absolutely business as usual. You're still expected to provide the full response, the correction, extent analysis, cause analysis, and corrective action, as found on our standard non-conformance report. Again, if you are doing a hybrid audit, you cannot just fix the issue between virtual and on-site portion. We do still need to get the full documented response from you. And in terms of the timing requirements, again, if there's going to be a gap between virtual portion and on-site portion, the clock does not start ticking until the full audit is complete. So if there's any kind of gap therein, we don't start that timer, so to speak, until the full audit is complete, just to assure you. Now, in conclusion, we are committed to a continuance of certification for our valued clients, and we definitely thank you for ensuring that auditing can continue, even in times when we cannot get on site. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. I have a special presentation on IATF remote auditing, and this is actually something that we think potentially is going to be coming to an end soon. We don't know that for sure and for certain, but we're starting to get a sense that automotive is going to be pivoting away from it. We also have a special presentation on the interaction of processes and its importance to a successful audit. And we have webinars on a lot of other topics, corrective action, stage one assessments, IATF 16949, and so forth. The best way for you to be kept informed of the latest news is to opt in. And you can do so by visiting our website at www.pgr.com. Enter your email address at the bottom of the page and click subscribe. You will be automatically added to our email distribution list. You'll get updates on points of interest, changes to the standards, new webinars, and other helpful information. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions for today. As a reminder, our presentation today will be available for download shortly after we're finished, and the recording will be posted to our YouTube page. So at this time, do we have any questions? Okay, Lisa Phillips has a question. If documents were provided in advance, should the auditor not review them in advance, prepare their questions? We were on a call for an hour with our team invitees without questions. Okay, good question, Lisa. In terms of reviewing the audit evidence, the audit time is meant to be spent during the audit. The assessment time is meant to be spent during the audit. Now, there is some measure of preparation, but I can understand the auditor's decision to want to review that information with the auditee present, so that if questions are raised, they can ask them in real time, develop audit trails, etc. So it's not completely incorrect for the auditor to have conducted the audit in that fashion. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you all for your time and have a great day.